You are listening to the podcast That's Life in Sweden, or as we say in Swedish, Sånt är livet i Sverige, with me, your host, Lisa Orsimäki. Today I want to welcome Rachel Zetterlund from the Netherlands to the podcast. Welcome, Rachel, and how are you today?
Thank you for having me. I'm doing really well today.
Good. You are actually in Netherlands and not here in Sweden.
Yeah, I live in the Netherlands. I've lived here for 6 years, but my father is Swedish and my background is Swedish.
Okay. So can you talk a little bit about your background and how you ended up working at a university in the Netherlands?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am what we call a third culture kid. I was born to expats abroad and I've lived in many countries. But I grew up in Canada and I ended up in the Netherlands because I was following my parents there. And they actually now live in Sweden, but I really enjoy the Netherlands and the culture. And I ended up working at a university here because I was a teacher when I lived in Canada and wanted to continue working in a kind of service-based environment. So in the university, I handle all the housing and relocation needs for new staff members, welcoming them to the Netherlands and showing them what life can be like to live here as an academic.
Mm-hmm. And you are, of course, involved with students. Do you teach as well?
No, not at the moment. Now it's more of a mentorship role for certain students.
Okay.
Who come through.
Right. And of course, that is going to be a very interesting area because you actually have a special interest in climate change and understanding eco-anxiety. So can you talk about what made you interested in eco-anxiety and what is eco-anxiety?
Sure, I can start with saying eco-anxiety is an extreme worry, a worry and a fear about the current state of the environment and future problems related to the environment, which is caused by climate change. And this is something that has been of interest to me for a long time because I find myself worrying about the environment quite a bit. Now, I have actually an anxiety disorder, which was diagnosed when I was around 21. And so I have the skills and the means to deal with something like this because it's a generalized or disorder unrelated to the climate crisis. But I think, and I have a lot of empathy for students now, undergraduate students specifically, who are going through the daily means of life without having the support they might need to deal with this specific form of anxiety, of eco-anxiety, how to deal with the climate crisis, how to deal with their emotions. And what I would like is to help them through this in a way that I wish I had help when I was 21 for something like this. And so for me, it's just about paying it forward and seeing what I can do to assist them with this.
And so you're interested in this particular area relates to the climate change, and that led you then to a master's thesis that is titled Understanding Eco-Anxiety, and it's about the individual lived experiences of undergraduate students aiming for a hopeful future. So before we talk about the thesis a little bit more, I'm curious about, do you think you obviously, so in your role with students at the University in Netherlands, you mentioned that you are in a role, you mentor student or specific students. So these students these are the students who have got anxiety or eco-anxiety. Is that correct?
Yeah, they have issues dealing with thinking about the climate crisis. I'm not a mental health professional like a psychologist, so I don't assist with helping with generalized anxiety disorders, but we can talk about the climate crisis in a more open way and discuss what they're feeling about it if they want to come and talk about it.
Okay. So, and how important do you think Greta Thunberg's influence has been on young people when you just, for example, when you think about the students you are supporting?
I think it's highly important. I think her name is not unknown to anyone of that age, not to anyone of any age, I think. But if I think back to my past, I was influenced by young climate influencers in Canada. And it was always someone who I could relate to of a similar age or a similar gender. And I think she's so important to the discourse around it and also to increased activism in young people. See the kind of things that they do now that they partake in is really interesting. And I think that she has played a huge role in pushing them forward to take action against the climate crisis and other social injustices.
Absolutely. So what about comparing students you meet today in your work to students you met, for example, before the pandemic? You said you've been in the Netherlands for 6 years. Have you noted an increase in students' mental health or general well-being?
Yes, definitely. I think that there has been an increased difficulty for students after the pandemic. Beforehand, I think the general worries of life, of course, still exist, but having to live through a pandemic period where here in the Netherlands, we had lockdowns and weren't allowed out at night, and a lot of different measures were in place. I can't quite imagine what it would be like to be 18, 19, 20 growing up during that time and not being able to go out and live your life normally. So I think that after the pandemic, it has definitely affected their ability to socialize in certain ways and to maybe ask for help or reach out for support themselves, maybe find these ways of doing this, which I expanded on in the thesis. I have some accounts from students who feel like the pandemic played a very big role to their ability to get help. And anxiety, I believe, was increased. It was increased during the pandemic and on a global scale. And of course, young people are deeply affected by this. But I think that now that we're a little bit post-pandemic or post the heavy period of the pandemic, they're starting to come out of it with increased activism, wanting to do something about it because they weren't able to do much during those periods.
You know, and we're coming now to your thesis, and I wonder if you can talk about what the thesis is about and some of the findings that you in particularly found.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. So my thesis, Understanding Eco-Anxiety, I wanted to explore the individuality of these the students that I interviewed for the research study and their lived experiences. So what I found was that, of course, there is quite a bit of research of the quantitative nature studying eco-anxiety and seeing worry and anxiety related to the climate crisis in young people. But I thought that there was something missing where we couldn't see exactly what they thought about it, some firsthand accounts of what they were experiencing. And I didn't, what I was discovering in this was that a lot of the young people who I interviewed really felt that they were affected by the climate crisis. And this was a bit of a surprise because I didn't reach out to students who were actively saying, I suffer from eco-anxiety. I wanted to talk to regular students as well to see if they had any issues dealing with the climate crisis. And as it turns out, they did. So what I found was that there are a lot of negative emotional states that revolve around dealing with the climate crisis. Of course, the major one being anxiety, worry, fear, and also sadness and some other pessimistic sort of feelings like disappointment, discontentment, and hopelessness. And these were strong in a lot of the students who I spoke to. But coming from this, a lot of them also felt quite hopeful about the future. So they still hold on to hope and motivation to do something for the future. So that was a joyful discovery to see that they weren't feeling so downtrodden by what they were experiencing in their lives, and that they were motivated to make a change for the future. And that's why we're aiming for hopeful climate futures where we can create positive change and also provide them with the support that they need based on what they themselves believe that they need to move forward.
And of course, these stories, you took each student through three stages in their lives. I mean, they're pretty young. I think, are they were around 20, 21 when you spoke to them?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
You know, so there's been a lot of things that would have influences, been great influence on them, like, you know, whether it's Harry Potter stories. I know you had several, or there were a couple of really interesting examples of how they were very young, what they experienced, you know, was it in the primary school age? And then was it, I think the second one was in high school, and then today's world, if you like. So can you talk about one of those stories? Because I thought there were a couple of them that were really, how you put it, was really quite interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. So yes, I went through a kind of life cycle, starting in childhood, coming to the present. And they are quite young, but I don't think that diminishes the experience of having a life story that they want to share and a life story that they're continuing. So one of the girls mentioned that she was inspired in high school by an actress from Harry Potter who has a YouTube channel about sustainable actions that they could take. And she was very inspired by this because she thought, oh, here is somebody that I already look up to from the movies, and I don't have to make big adjustments to my life. I can make simple adjustments by just paying attention to the clothing labels, trying not to support fast fashion, limiting meat and dairy. And she said it was quite inspiring, and while she maybe wasn't personally ready to go vegan, she could make the other choices that she learned from watching this YouTube channel. So social media plays an important role. And then one of the other students who I interviewed, she also mentioned that she was vegan for a period, started being vegan in order to help the earth and take personal action in the face of climate change, thinking that their mindset was thinking that this is going to help and I'm going to help with every little bit. And this was around the age of 13, which was really interesting to hear that a 13-year-old was taking this kind of action for themselves, especially for climate change. And they did say that they stopped being vegan after a period, and they said, I'm not sure the exact reason I stopped, but maybe I didn't feel so strongly that it was helping, or climate change didn't stop me from eating meat anymore and slacked off with veganism. And what they expressed was that they did that at that time, but later in life felt guilty about slacking off with veganism, and wanting to be aware of what they were doing in different ways. A lot of them focused on fast fashion.
What about their parents? What role did the parents play during their upbringing? What support did the parents provide them?
That's quite interesting, because not a lot, I would say very few, mentioned their parents. A lot of them felt that it was their own personal responsibility or something that they themselves had to do. They mentioned their parents in childhood being able to explain concepts of climate change to them, being able to help them when they're feeling anxious or worried about the planet, and their parents talked them out of it or explained what the ozone layer is to them, explained what CO2 emissions are. So this kind of role where they are supporting them as children, but it seems that the older that they get, they feel that they have this personal responsibility towards the climate change, which also then turns into them understanding that they are one person and that they can't make a whole difference, but it is something through community that needs to be done.
And are they involved with different ways of supporting, you know, whether it's climate action or involved? Are they taking mm-hmm. action in order to make them see, make themselves, I guess, empowered today? What is happening today?
Yeah, so a couple of them do take action in their own lives. You know, we mentioned Greta Thunberg earlier. One of them was actively participating in Climate Action Fridays for Future, which is Greta Thunberg's initiative. And another student actively donates and wants to make sure that other people understand, saying really wanting as an individual to convince people to be in the same mindset as themselves, going to climate marches, taking part in actions that they're able to take, able to be a part of in where they are in the world. And what they also say about responsibility is, you know, actively aiming for that hopeful future and not blaming themselves as the only one who can take action, but trying to get other people involved. Now, this is not the case for everyone. Some of them feel that have taken another route of that I am not the only one responsible, and feeling that they really cannot do anything at the moment, and having more of an apathetic approach where they do not do anything, and saying that I don't have the time, or I can't think about it because it's too difficult to think about. And what stems from that, I discovered through the research, was that they do feel guilt about feeling that way. Yeah.
Yes. That's exactly what I'm thinking. That, in one way, I mean, and of course, the pandemic mm-hmm. has not helped, because students were not meeting each other face to face. A lot of the young people, I mean, we were all, if you like, isolated from each other. And it is only through when we meet and we can talk and we can share our experience of being mm-hmm. isolated, and how that is causing negative feelings within ourselves. So, you know, in your part of the world, what are they doing to help students? Do they bring up eco anxiety, or?
Well, we at our university, we do have a couple options to take charge, as we have the Green Office, which is an office run by the students to
talk about climate change, run climate workshops. They do seed sovereignty, where they can make seed bombs. There's a library for just ecological books, and also books where they can read about the climate crisis, and they can take small actions like donating clothes. But what I heard from some of the students is that they feel like while these actions are there, there should be more from an institutional side of things, where they have more workshops, more discussions in the classroom, in curricula, especially in the sustainability or environmental curriculum, where they can discuss these things without having such a negative connotation, if we can openly discuss everyone's stories. So this was interesting to hear what they wanted to hear from it, what they felt wasn't enough, that some of them feel that it is enough to have these small actions, but others feel that they should be encouraged to take positions in organizations and in climate activism to better engage more people to discuss the climate crisis and what they can do themselves. And one of the participants suggested that she would feel more engaged if she was able to have in-depth discussions with experts about this, and that these kind of things would be made available to her through a university, and to have a kind of increased interest in exploring what the options may be. So that was very interesting to hear of what she wanted to engage with herself. And also from the end of the interviews I did with the subjects, they felt that even being interviewed about it, to say their own thoughts out loud about the climate crisis was beneficial to them to either continue to engage or re-engage in ways that they had stopped, saying, you've made me think about this a little bit more, and maybe I'm going to now look into some options and look into positive climate news and look into what I can do at home at my university. And that would make them feel better on the mental health side of things as well, that they're able to take action and make a difference. So I think those are some things that we could do going forward, is maybe have more holistic approaches for conversation, to share stories. We might hear something from someone that ignites something in us that we weren't able to hear before, or that we didn't know at all. And I myself felt very inspired from hearing the stories that they shared for me. I didn't know that the actress from Harry Potter had a YouTube channel where she shared sustainable tips. And I looked into it and I thought, this is really well done as well, what she's sharing. So these kind of things, I think we could do, making this kind of intrinsic link between narrative storytelling and mental health to share with one another.
If I was to ask you who suffers from echo anxiety, what is your response to that? What did you find out?
I think my response is that probably everyone to some degree suffers from echo anxiety. They might not know a direct terminology to say, I suffer from echo anxiety, but there is a prevalent worry about the climate crisis and a fear that ran through each of the students, even the ones who felt apathetic. I think feeling guilt about a feeling that they feel themselves also shows that they feel a little something about the climate crisis, that they are worried inside, and that eco-anxiety can affect everyone. And we see this in these young people who are around 20 years old, but I think that it could affect everybody, but that's a very important age to develop skills to battle or to confront mental health issues, especially related to the climate crisis, as they graduate from their degrees, enter the workforce, and go forward trying to, you know, get the message out as well if they choose to partake in activism. And maybe they can help other people who suffer from eco-anxiety who don't know that they do. I think there needs to be more research done on different groups and seeing that who is suffering from this especially. I think we know that the climate crisis affects those who are physically affected by the climate crisis more, but these students are not, have stated that they're not physically affected, but they still deal with deep anxieties regarding their futures and surrounding the climate. So I think it affects everyone.
Yes. And of course, when it affects us mm-hmm. personally, if you come from countries where there's mm-hmm. drought and where there's floods, and I'm thinking automatically on about mm-hmm. Australia. And so, you know, these are exactly, so we know there's evidence of climate change and climate crisis, but if it's not directly having an impact on us, you know, then it's, then I'm always concerned about that because it's not impacting me, and then the fear that is developing mm-hmm. within me. And I guess that's a question that that needs to perhaps be looked more into or more research done on it. Exactly what you are talking mm-hmm. about with these young people who may not have had any anxiety or mental health disorder or issues even before mm-hmm. the pandemic.
Yeah. Very much so that they could have developed these things due to their isolation in yes. the pandemic or confronting feelings that they haven't had before.
Absolutely. So in your role, you are now mentoring these students. So, and of course, it's really great to hear that through interviews. So when you allow students to express themselves, to express what they're feeling, they actually, when they reflect back to the conversation, there is a positive, they come out in a positive frame of mind. Did you find that, you know, after you had spoken, what was the relationship between you and the students?
Yeah, after we had spoken, I think I wasn't so shocked, but I was pleased to discover that they wanted to continue speaking, you know, and some of them directly after the interview for their study said, I have questions, which is such a great thing to hear. I have questions and I want to know where can I look for certain things. And they're so savvy to online and technologically and where they want to look on all the different social medias. But to have them directly ask for help, to ask questions right after, was a great thing to hear and to share where on social media they can find examples of positive climate news, where on social media they can look for examples of people who are focused on sustainable methods and sharing things much like on YouTube. And so that was really great to hear. And then moving forward, hope for feeling hopeful about what they were going to do in the future to hear. I asked, well, do you have any questions and how are you feeling? Always checking in to see how they're feeling and saying, I feel actually quite good, even though it is sometimes a difficult conversation. I feel that I can take steps and think about this more now without feeling so worried. So that was really nice. And that's what made me think we need to have more conversation. We need to have more discussions and we need to share stories with each other.
And that's exactly, I guess, what you will be doing in the future.
Oh, yes. What I would like to do going forward is see how we can have more conversations this way, to maybe have some kind of workshop where we can share, have some kind of openness, a workshop with students who maybe feel that they suffer from echo anxiety and say that they do, and students who don't, and maybe learn something about themselves in the process. And also to see how this kind of interviewing can really help going forward in addressing some concerns for the climate crisis and understanding the lived experience of undergraduate students and hearing what they have to say for themselves. I think that it's really beneficial to hear firsthand accounts of things and of stories, and also to hear how people feel. We can see a number of how people feel, but to hear it from themselves is something different.
Mm. And when you talk about workshops, you are talking about face-to-face workshops.
Yes, we have the ability to do face-to-face workshops now post-pandemic. So it's great to have those in person.
Yeah. Do you think it's better than online?
I do. I think it's nice to have that personal relationship, but there are benefits to having workshops online. You can reach more people. You can have a broader range of people from different backgrounds and talk to people who are in different places at the same time. So there's a benefit there. And I think in person, but I think in person can also really be a great method to connect and to socialize within a community, a smaller sort of connection. And then you meet people face to face who may share the same values as you.
Okay. And so what's next for you? You're going to, have you now decided that you might start up with these workshops, or are you going to continue further study, or what's your plan for the future?
Well, my plan is still in the works. My story is also being written. I think for me going forward, I really felt passionate about this subject and I want to continue it. There are some options to host workshops, not within the institution, but within the community.
Wonderful.
Which is also really important to me. So I'm looking into ways to host a couple types of workshops. Eco-anxiety is really important. So if people are interested in talking about that, I would be more than happy to host and to have a workshop on that. And secondly, what we talked about, sustainable methods, to have a workshop to discuss things that we could do together going forward, and maybe even teach some sustainable practices. My hobby is sewing, and so I like to fix clothes. I like to remake things. And this to me is something as well that we can do going forward to provoke an interest in some sustainable practices.
Great. Raquel, is there anything you want to add to the conversation that we haven't spoke about that you think is of particular importance?
I think what I learned from this process of working on the research project, the master's research project, was how important it is to listen and to have this kind of conversation. It was the most important thing to me, was to hear these students and that they had somebody to talk to. And so that is what I would just like to say going forward, is we need to listen to our students when they come to us with any kind of problem or issue, and maybe just take a patient moment to hear them out and know that they might be suffering from something that they don't know how to express yet, that we may not be aware of. And so listening and just hearing them might be the perfect first step, that they just wanted someone to hear them.
Is there anywhere people can contact you? Do you have a particular contact details if you are interested in people who are listening to the podcast. If they want to contact you, can you send me an email? Just this is the contact that people can contact me if they're curious.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, okay, fabulous. Raquel, thank you so much for your time and for sharing the stories from your thesis, as well as talking about from your personal perspective about the importance of looking after our students and taking the time out to listen to them.
Thank you.
And you have been listening to the podcast Sånt är livet i Sverige, or in English, That's Life here in Sweden, with me, Lisa Orsimäki. Till next time, take care of yourself and each other. Bye for now.